The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. It's great to be in for Dory once again and be working with my old producer and friend, Nicole Thompson, the real guru behind the show.
Thanks for being here, Dave.
All that credit. Yeah, you bet. It's always fun, except I really hate driving through Seattle to get here. You know, you'd think I'm only a couple of miles away, but I always have to set aside a half hour, which is, you know, it's brutal.
You've been using the new tunnel.
What we need is, forget about tunnels, what we need is some of those ski lifts over the new skyscrapers here. And just
That'd
move
be
us
pretty
from,
cool, actually.
From one to the next, get us around town. Plus, we could probably sell tourist tickets.
You know? I would support that. That would be really cool.
Get the ski lifts going. It might mess with the view of the skyline because you just kind of have a web of wires moving people. But at this point, I'm willing. But enough of that. This is the show where we talk about the big leads of the day. And let's start with big lead number one.
The big lead, top story.
Top story is 405 toll lanes expanding, perhaps from Bellevue to Renton. Legislation up for discussion in Olympia would see the expansion of I-405 toll lanes. This, even though the current toll lanes failed, right? They didn't achieve their 45 miles per hour 95% of the time promise. Q13 talked with the Washington State Department of Transportation Director of Tolling, Edward Berry, who says, look, you know, they didn't fail, and we're not trying to get out of any promises.
I'm specifically talking about two promises made to the public. One is not met, and all of a sudden, you guys are gutting that from the language. It appears fishy. How could you explain it?
We're not gutting that language. That performance measure is still in there, and we're still going to report on that. If there's alternative ways that we can measure performance, that language will allow us to do that.
By the language, the performance language being in there, it goes from a shall to an option. So let me ask you, if you have a performance requirement at work and says you might want to do this, is it the same as you shall? I mean, come on, it's not a performance measure anymore. If you have to meet it in order to, let me put it this way, if you have to get a bonus, if you have to achieve a certain result, then you'll get the bonus, right? You know the difference, or if the employer says, well, look, it would be great if you got that, but you're going to get your bonus one way or the other. Everybody can see the difference. So when you've got people saying, oh, look, that language isn't gutted, we're just changing it to make it optional, we're eliminating it altogether. Well, that's the definition of gutting. But in the WASDOT Director of Tolling defense, he thinks the lanes are a success already.
I think they are a success. And, you know, the HOV lane prior to the express toll lanes didn't make that metric nearly at all. It was only at 56% at 45 miles per hour.
So, sure, they're not making their own promises for what a success would look like. But let's not take away from that they're not successful. Let's just change the standard and call it successful anyway. And now we want the expansion. Plus, we want to make the tolls permanent so that you will all be we'll be taking more money from you. After all, in 3 years, according to the story from Q13, the toll lanes from Bellevue to Linwood raised about $75 million, which allowed WASDOT to exceed their revenue goals. And if there's one thing government likes, it's a policy that exceeds revenue goals. In other words, it takes more tax dollars from you than they thought they would be able to. So that's the news there. Whether or not the tolls are expanded depends on how you, the public, react. Which brings us to Big Lead 2.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Homeless encampments. There's a bill in Olympia designed to keep homeless encampments 1,000 feet from schools. This offered by Senator Curtis King. I used to work with Senator Curtis King when I worked in the legislature. A gentleman, if there ever was one. Cairo Television talked with a mom who's worried about the encampments.
You don't know what kind of people are living on the streets, and like a lot of them have bad habits, so you don't want that around your kids, you know?
I love how we're trained to be understated, because in current society, if you make a generalization, everybody's out in the Twitterverse to grab their virtual pitchfork and their virtual torch and go after you. You know, wouldn't it be perfectly safe to say if you're living in a tent encampment, you have bad habits? Forget about the probably. I even said it there because we're in such a habit of trying to allow for the exception that proves the rule, right? If you're the odds of you not having bad habits and living in a tent are extremely small. There's just, if you're living amongst an encampment and a bunch of garbage and trash and needles, yeah, you've got a problem. Senator Curtis King says this bill to move these homeless camps at least 1,000 feet from schools is plain old common sense.
We have laws that say you can't put a marijuana store within 1,000 feet of a school or a liquor store. Why would you put a homeless encampment there?
In fact, I'd rather have a marijuana store or a liquor store next to the school than the homeless encampment next to the school. Wouldn't you? I mean, is there anybody who feels differently? You take a look at what these encampments look like. There's garbage. There's trash. You're worried about what kind of disease your kids might be exposed to if they picked up some garbage and poked themselves in some way. It's just totally disastrous. Now, the question I have, though, is that, you know, when he says, look, the bill just makes sense, we already have laws against camping in public spaces, and nobody seems to care about that. I mean, you know, it's a rare city and rare county where somebody in charge doesn't say, you know, you're not allowed to park. We're not going to turn this park into a garbage heap. You're out. It's not going to happen. We're not going to turn our sidewalks into that. We're not going to turn it. We're going to move you. We're going to find a space for you. We're going to get you into shelter and move you along. And it's because for a lot of people struggling with addiction, the addiction has a hold over their mind. They're going to choose the addiction over help. And so as long as you give them the option of doing that, they'll continue to do that. But that's not helping them. And that's aiding in their own destruction. A regulated tiny home village resident says he doesn't see a problem with this bill.
If they're regulated, that means you wouldn't have the drugs and stuff involved. But if they're unregulated, then no. You don't know who's inside. You don't know what their lifestyle may have been. They could have been a murderer.
So you can tell this tiny home resident is not from the Seattle tiny home outfit, because when he said, you know, if it's a regulated tiny home encampment, then you don't have the drugs. But what did we learn about Seattle's tiny home encampment? There was drugs all over the place. Crime skyrocketing in the vicinity of the establishment. You know, yes, some of the people probably had bad habits. An Olympia homeowner talked about what he finds in the area around the current encampments in Olympia.
There's tents back here, stolen mail, tons of garbage, heroin needles. There's used condoms.
All right. So it's just a perfect place for kids to be playing, right? All kinds of things for them to get into and get exposed to. It's a total disaster, and it's such common sense. Although, let me tell you what I found in Olympia the last time I was there near the homeless encampment. I found the roads roped off because somebody had just gotten stabbed. So my car had to get diverted because there was a major stabbing at the encampment there. This Olympia tent resident says, however, that he doesn't think this bill's fair.
Everybody has rights, and sometimes when people are down on their luck, sometimes they frown upon that, and they feel like they can bully you. And so that's the part I feel like where's wrong at.
All right. Your feelings don't matter. You feel like this is just picking on people. If you're finding a bunch of heroin needles and garbage and cast about human waste, those are choices. You know, there are ways to not throw stuff all over the place, right? Even if you're in dire straits, and I've known folks that have been in such, it doesn't mean that it's a license for heroin use. When he's saying, hey, they're just down on your luck, that's not down on your luck. That's formulating truly horrible habits, awful, awful, awful habits and decisions. You know, if you're in a position where you're saying to yourself, gosh, I can't afford to live in Seattle, I guess I'll just go on the street. The first thing I would do is I'd be looking at housing prices somewhere else, even if it was a long ways off, because I'd want to be getting out. I wouldn't want to end up on the street, and I certainly wouldn't be shooting up heroin and calling it a mistake. Or some kind of alternative life cycle choice that other people are judging unfairly. You can't have that in your neighborhood and be safe. I live in a fairly decent part of Tacoma. You know, the neighbors are all very friendly. We enjoy each other's company. It doesn't really matter your politics. You're walking around, you say hi to one another. And yet, time and time again, we're getting warnings of people, you know, at night, they're cruising for the cars, you know, looking to break into a car. There's been houses and garages that have been burgled, and it's all tied into a drug habit. You know, it's not a mystery. And lo and behold, when there was an encampment fairly nearby, was petty crime up in the neighborhood? Yes, I'll answer that for you. Brings us to a related Big Lead 3.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
You know, it was snowing in Seattle when I drove into town today, but in the Nisqually area of Thurston County, residents are finding not snow, but thousands of new needles dumped all over the ground as though it was raining needles on their roads. Molly Miller told Cairo 7.
I've picked up over 300.
300 needles in your area. Now, imagine that, particularly when you think, hey, one poke of this needle and I might need medical attention. And
Clean needles. They're brand new needles.
They're clean?
They're all brand new.
I did not get that from the story. Piles and piles of needles are all brand new?
All brand new.
Well, what's she complaining about? I mean, who doesn't love a good pile of needles? You know? I mean,
she
could be calling the homeless encampment saying, come on over, you know? Are they in a bag? Plastic bags?
No, they're just scattered, so people are running over them, and they're breaking in the road and poking tires.
That doesn't feel clean to me.
And then dogs are have the potential to step on them.
But they have to be opening them first in order to dump them out, right?
No, they're getting driven over. So they're just dumping them out their window. People are driving over them. They're crushing them. So then there's this needle
my theory on this was that somebody had a needle dispensary in a bathroom or something at their profession.
Right.
And there was someone in that neighborhood they hated, probably an ugly divorce or something. And they're just dumping them out there because they're evil and want to
teach a lesson. It's very strange.
In this case, they're taking perfectly good needles, losing money by dumping them out the window and making life a living hell for everybody else.
Yeah.
And by the way, try being barefoot, you know, running through the lawn there with a bunch of needles. It's like an episode of Saw.
Not sure who's running around barefoot right now, but it could come back and bite them in the summer.
It could be. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it could be 2 years from now.
Right.
And you're walking along all of a sudden, hey, what's that very sharp sliver I now have going through my Achilles?
Mm-hmm.
Ow. Anyway, well, that's even weirder.
The clean needles. It's very strange.
So maybe if you just called some of these encampments, you know, maybe they'd come pick them up for you. Because they're always looking for a new supply, you know.
I have kids, and I have a lot of friends in this neighborhood who walk their dogs every day. Somebody's seen a kid here at the bus stop this morning pick one up.
Of course. Kid's going to do it. And when they say, don't pick up that sharp object, what do kids do? They go and pick up the sharp object. Sean Trepanier says he's been picking them up. This is one of the neighbors.
Last night, I picked up 30, 40 needles right down the road here on my street.
Unused.
This is like the worst form of Santa Claus. It's like Needle Santa. He's just running around throwing needles to the neighborhood.
Really weird.
It is. Hey, just in case you lack some needles.
They have picked up some needles, but can't themselves safely handle the volume of needles showing up in this neighborhood. Deputies say a private company did a sweep and left the department with a costly bill, so they're now working with county roads crews for cleanup on top of emphasis patrols in an area they said is already heavily patrolled.
I have a friend with a diabetic dog. I might go pick up some of those myself.
Hey, we've got a free needle supply for your diabetic dog from here on out. It's all nothing but good news for you. Sean, this is neighbor Sean, says it's obvious what's happening, which is good for us because I have no idea.
They look like they're just driving slowly through the neighborhood and they just take a pile and drop them out the window.
Who takes a pile of needles and drops them out the window? I did see a guy today, and I hadn't seen this in a long time, and I was thinking about things that I saw as a kid that nobody sees anymore, like, you know, guys riding motorcycles without helmets, for example, or riding a bicycle down a hill with a helmet as a kid, or riding the back of a pickup truck, or throwing cigarette butts out the window. Today, I saw somebody throw a cigarette butt out the window, and I thought, loser, I mean, luckily it's wet, but, you know, if it were summer, you're the kind of person that starts a fire. In this case, though, throwing handfuls, I mean, even handfuls, I can't fit 100 needles in my hand, and I'm a big guy. That's a lot of needles.
Yeah, it's interesting because you would think that this is somebody that is protesting giving away these needles to people who are using them for drugs, right, or something along those lines, but then you're creating another danger.
Yeah.
So I can't think of a scenario that works for this.
I can't either. The only person I can think of to ask is that Smollett actor. He might be able to come up with something. He seems to be a creative guy.
Yeah, he's
guy from Empire.
Creative.
You know, get him over here. Tell him to explain it to us. He should be able to come up
His didn't last as long as this little hoax.
Yeah. Well, when you write a check for your criminal behavior, a personal check with your name on it, it's always a good move.
Shocking.
You know, good move. Anyway, Molly neighbors that want something done.
Something's got to change or something bad's going to happen down here.
So what I'm thinking is you need to get those the cameras are pretty cheap. Your neighbors need to get together and buy one of those Costco cameras for the outdoors where you can just spy on with a road and basically figure out who's throwing these needles, right? I mean, you could even do a timestamp if you just do a check. You follow what I'm saying, right?
I have Andrew talking in my ear as well.
Well, that happens all the time. Well, it's all right. You're like my family. You listen to me, you know, 1/10 of the time.
Sorry.
So basically, though, if they're trying to figure out what's going on, you can go to Costco or Walmart or something and get outdoor cameras now fairly cheap, you know, Wi-Fi cameras. And I would start pointing them at the roads and everywhere with these needle things. And then there's got to be some retirees in the neighborhood or people who are not working all the time. You got to do a walkthrough and do a time check for when the needles show up. When they're gone, do a sweep so they're gone. And then you just walk through and you start time checking. Okay, they didn't show up at noon. They were there by 5. And now you've got a window of when, you know, to start checking your cameras. And just keep doing it till you narrow it down and catch this guy. So it's basically a tracking operation for the needle Santa to figure out why they're throwing this stuff out in the middle of the neighborhood.
I know they didn't really talk about, in the Cairo 7 report, they didn't really address whether it's being looked into, because they said that they've talked to authorities and they're having a hard time keeping them cleaned up, but they didn't say, we're having a hard time tracking them down. Like, they should be able to check surveillance footage and see the car, I suppose.
I hate to say it, but you can imagine police thinking, all right, we've got encampments where actual harm is being done to other people. In this case, it's an annoyance,
they're
nobody's
clean.
Been hurt yet, right?
They're clean.
Yeah, they're,
so they're not
clean needles.
I know.
And
it's,
so,
but it's very bizarre.
It is. And the kids are picking them up. They're near the school bus stop. So it's really creepy. And I agree with this poor mom here that it sounds like something bad is ultimately going to happen.
Well, she actually meant she was going to take care of the guy. She kind of made this, I'm being nice right now, but I might take care of this person myself.
I'm rooting for her in many ways. I don't want her to go too far off the handle, but, you know, I mean, I can think of things to do to make sure that this person stops.
All right.
I'm not advocating lawlessness. I'm just saying, you know, I can see where something bad will happen. Then the authorities are going to say, hey, well, look, there's a problem here we need to take care of. But as it stands right now, it's like, wait, this is a big pile of clean needles. We're dealing with thousands of unclean needles over here in this encampment that's 50 feet from the school versus the unused. See, my mind didn't even let me see that. It's right at the top of the story there.
Yeah.
I just read it as used, and now I see unused. Now, this story just makes no sense to me at all now.
Back the curtains. I just hand
right.
him what we're talking about.
Yeah,
he goes with it.
I feel like this is the Land of Oz. Well, I mean, I saw the whole story. I never grasped the whole unused. It's strange. If I had to pick a criminal using needles, it would be this person. Because if I have to have a needle problem in the neighborhood and some deranged lunatic is out there with these things, I would want to make sure they were unused needles with the nice little caps on the end so that we didn't get into a whole lot of pain. We'll be talking with Maria Frost of Washington Policy Center about tolling on I-405 and whether or not the state is reneging on their agreement on what would make it a success. And we'll talk about how their plan is to make it permanent, so you're paying all the time. Here on the Dory Monson Show, David Bowes filling in. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. There are a number of area commuters that are gearing up and getting excited about paying more tolls everlastingly. That is the possibility based on a bill in Olympia that would help expand and make permanent the 405, the infamous 405 tolls that have failed to meet the metrics that they were originally promised to meet. Here to talk about it with us is Maria Frost of the Washington Policy Center, a good friend of mine. Maria, thanks so much for making the time.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So originally, when the I-405 toll lanes were proposed, there was two metrics that were promised that would be delivered or those tolls would go away. What were those two metrics?
Those two metrics were that the tolls would generate enough money from the public to cover operating expenses. And the other metric was that the lanes would operate at 45 miles per hour, at least 90% of the time over that 2-year pilot. And if DOT was unable to meet both of those requirements, the toll lanes they promised would be terminated.
So let's face it, the operating costs to make that much money, that to me is like the gimme. I mean, I don't see how you could possibly not get enough money for the operational costs of the tolls on 405. The key promise,
right,
and the one that really grabbed the attention of commuters was making sure that they kept the 45 miles per hour 95% of the time. So which one of those metrics did they accomplish?
Well, of course, DOT made enough money over the last 36 months. They made $75 million from your tolls, but they have consistently failed to operate at 45 miles per hour 90% of the time. They're operating on average at that speed at about 81%, but that's on average. You've got different performance on northbound and southbound lanes, and so they're failing. The lanes are failing the public, and that 45 mile per hour speed metric was really a key performance metric for the public, who were promised faster, more reliable.
Well, let me throw this at you for devil's advocate. They say there are those supporters who say, look, the tolls, they're actually succeeding because we couldn't have foreseen at this time the wild population growth of the area. There's more people than ever using these roads. Without these toll lanes, that lane would be choked off too. So really, we should be celebrating the accomplishment at this point. And when we talk about expanding the toll lanes farther, we're really talking about more congestion relief for people who are commuting to work with partners and sharing rides.
See, I don't view the toll lanes as a success if they are largely operating underneath that metric. And the reason being is the way that metric is derived is by looking at a peak period of 4 hours. But it's the highway is not congested that way the entire peak period. It's most congested during the peak hour, which is when everybody is on the road trying to get to work. And so what I'm trying to get from DOT is an average toll rate that people are paying during that peak hour when those lanes are failing even worse than that average over the larger period. And so I think it's wildly inaccurate to say that they are a success, especially since the toll lanes, while they're measured at that peak period, the HOV lanes that are also failing throughout the region are being measured at that peak hour. In other words, the data is rigged, so to speak, to show the HOV lanes failing even worse, to then make a case to turn those lanes into express toll lanes as well.
Now, this is new to me, and I even work with you. So, I mean, I had not grasped this part yet. So we've got an arrangement, basically, where we have some lanes that are designed to look like they're failing in order to become revenue-generating, in other words, tax-taking lanes for people. There's legislation right now in Olympia under consideration that would enable DOT to get rid of this pesky metric that you keep citing, their former promise. Tell us more about that legislation and what it would end up doing.
Sure. So the bill is primarily authorizes tolls on 405, 167, and 509. For 405 in particular, it authorizes tolling south of Bellevue down to Renton. But if you keep reading in the bill, the lawmaker who proposed it, Senator Hobbs, who's the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee, has decided to also strike the 45 mile per hour speed metric and replace it with the most efficient movement of travel. Now, that's an incredibly subjective way to interpret speed. Who determines what's an efficient movement of travel? And then further in the bill, where they have the 45 mile per hour speed metric mentioned again, they add an alternative metric. In other words, they make the requirement optional, and by making it optional, they nullify it. A requirement that's optional is not a requirement. And that's why we've been saying that they are gutting that speed metric, which is so important to the public.
So if this new one goes through, we would not only have new toll lanes, but the prior promises of old toll lanes would be erased. And the toll lanes that are established from here on out on these highways would no longer have a speed metric attached to them, in effect. They could just be as congested
right.
as as anything else.
And that makes them permanent, right? Because then DOT, I mean, the public has no recourse to hold DOT accountable. What's really amazing, or rather suspicious about the whole thing, is that DOT had interpreted the law last year and had said, hey, we don't actually have to meet both of those requirements. It's okay that we're failing the speed metric. Now, if they're really okay with that, if they're really secure in their interpretation of the law, why are they taking it to this length to then eradicate it from the RCW, from current statute? To me, that's very suspicious. And on top of that, to really make matters worse, they then, later in the bill, strike the language that protects the toll money in the motor vehicle fund, which is money that's protected for highway purposes only. They strike it from, in other words, by strike, I mean, they make it so that it no longer goes into that account, but instead goes to the state treasury. And what that tells me is that they want to spend that money for other things like transit improvements.
Yeah, what that says is it's highway robbery of highway road funds, which you pointed out in your op-ed in the Seattle Times. Right, where
it's terrible policy.
Yeah,
it breaks a major promise to the public, and moving it out of the motor vehicle fund, which protects drivers by making their money serve them, right, providing a benefit to drivers, it eliminates that. So it's terrible policy. It's a huge broken promise.
So it goes from
a
protected roads fund to a slush fund is what it ends up being.
Correct.
Because once it gets into the general fund, where people can touch it for all kinds of different reasons, and there's all kinds of different priorities, it's no longer a user fee at all. It's a tax. So it's a new way of taxing, a new way of taking revenue from taxpayers and calling it a user fee, but it's not at that
That's
point.
Correct. And yeah. And DOT has said, well, no, we want lawmakers to decide where that money goes. But again, I find that highly, highly suspicious.
Where does the legislation stand, real quick?
The bill received a public hearing yesterday, and so now we're waiting for it to be voted out of committee. Once it's voted out of committee, it would then go to the floor for debate. There is a companion bill in the House, House Bill 1899, sponsored by the House Transportation Chair, Representative Fai. I don't believe that bill has had a hearing yet.
So the good news for folks is a lot of people in the South Sound are probably thinking, well, some in Gig Harbor might be thinking, well, we got nailed with a bunch of tolls on the bridge, so too bad for you guys, ha-ha. But others in the South Sound might be thinking, well, this doesn't apply to me. Well, would you say that this kind of precedent and this kind of desire for more and more tolling lanes with less and less accountability is moving to more of a statewide outlook, or can people just kind of say, well, I-405 is the problem for people living along I-405 and so forth?
No, I think this represents a more broad move, but I think it's going to be very slow and incremental, you know, a boiling of the frog, so to speak. But I think if the intent of lawmakers is to expand tolling throughout the state, then doing it so dishonestly sets a terrible precedent. It really hurts their credibility with the public and really hurts their own efforts to expand tolling.
Maria Frost is the director of the Cole Center for Transportation at the Washington Policy Center and an all-around guru when it comes to transportation. Maria, thanks so much for making the time, my friend.
Thank you.
You bet. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. David Bowes in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM. You can always share your comments with us via the Online Trading Academy text line. Just text us at 98973. That's the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. Just don't text us while you're driving. You're supposed to delay on that. When you're parking. After you've parked, that's okay. And you can text us at any time there. A little Oregon update, our neighbor to the south is engaged in a couple of different crazy. In fact, Nicole, why didn't we save this for the sign that the end is near? Today's sign.
No, we're doing it now.
It's crazy because
I know.
If there ever was a sign that we're getting toward the end of civilization, this would be one of them. Oregon lawmakers seeking to lower the voting age in the state to 16. So that, according to the bill's sponsor, State Senator Sherina Fagan, teens can, quote, protect their future. end quote.
I think we protect it better not allowing them to vote.
Isn't the whole point of having parents the recognition, the inherent recognition that teens need older adults to protect their future? Otherwise, their future is in serious jeopardy. That's why they're in school. It's why they've got that we don't grant them, you know, emancipation except in extraordinary circumstances from their parents. They still have to obey some rules and have some guidelines, but they want to lower the voting
knowledge
age.
And just the knowledge. You're not even into what I think I took a U.S. history class, and as a senior, I think, or as a junior, that's when we went to Washington, D.C. So you don't even have the knowledge of what you're making decisions about when you're 16 and a freshman in high school.
Yeah, I was a nerd. I remember sitting in current events class. There was only a couple of us who wanted to answer every question, you know.
Right.
But the rest of the class, like, oh, it's so boring. Who cares? You know, you give them a quiz on any local government issue and it's just they're toast.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I was just saying the 16-year-olds that I know are not making good decisions right now. So I would not trust them with anything that has anything to do with my life.
This is just such blatant laziness. Like, hey, you know what? We've got some.
I'm sure some of them are making good decisions.
Some easily persuaded voters. Oh, see?
Once in a while.
You just did.
I just thought of one that makes good decisions.
Of course. There's always the exception that proves the rule. But it's a generality. And now we're so worried about having that one exception that we have to, I did want to say that people living under a blue tarp on the side of the freeway have made some bad choices.
I take it back.
You know, people might not have. Anyway, this legislator wants to make sure that Oregonians at the age of 16 can vote. I'm wondering if we're going to give them the power to vote and equal authority, then the same argument would apply to 15-year-olds, right? Or is it something magical about the car license and 14-year-olds? And if you're going to protect their future and they need a stand in it, well, what about a 5-year-old? I mean, shouldn't it be just when they can read and comprehend the fact that there is a future? Where do you draw this line? And secondly, in Washington State, we're trying to make it so that cigarette smoking and tobacco use would have to, and vaping would be up to 21, right? Isn't that one of the big things in the legislature this time around for social issues here? And so on one hand, when it comes to government care to make decisions, it's, oh, gosh, you know, these people, even though they're adults at the age of 18, big tobacco, they'll show them a cartoon of a camel. Next thing you know, they're hooked. We've got to put a stop to it. We need the power of government to put an end to it. And then because they're helpless. And then the next thing you know, we're wanting to give them additional powers under the age of 18 and say, well, we should treat them as adults at 16, except not when they commit a crime, because how would they know? So we have this this habit of trying to want it both ways, where we want everybody to be an adult. Now, I admit that there are certain circumstances. You can trust kids within certain – just like – you know, people trust their teenager with a certain level of freedom, but it's a rolling out period, basically, where you're introducing them to the world of adulthood. And sometimes even I will get into the bad habit of referring to college students as kids, college kids. They're really not kids, just old people calling younger people kids. That's okay, but technically they're adults and they should act at least within certain guidelines. You expect a certain amount of misbehavior, but nothing that would result in an adult prison. Oregon also wants rent control, but that's a subject for another time. They just want control. That's the operative word. David Bowe's in for Dory Monson here on 97.3 Cairo FM.